Call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. First bill on the agenda is House File 3251, Representative Lilly. I think we do have a quorum present. So the chair will move that House File 3251 be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on Finance. Representative Lilly, I think you have a couple of amendments.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, we have two amendments. The A1 amendment is from the Department of Commerce, essentially covers the fees related to the costs to do this work. We have Mr. Carlson and Mr. Peterson Pulse in the audience to answer some questions if need be. And the A1 amendment is a language that would conform to the Senate language. So that's our two amendments. And then we have an A3 amendment would offer free tickets to the Palin event this evening. That's a hobby amendment.
Well, the the chair, Representative Lilly, will move the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
Thank you.
Motion prevails. And chair will also move the A2 amendment. Any discussion to that? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Will Representative Lilly let Representative Hoppe move the A3 amendment if he wants to?
Mr. Chair, I believe he'll move it when he feels it's appropriate.
I trust that would be the case.
Mr. Chair, if Representative Lilly could just wait patiently, I'll get to him.
I think Representative Lilly is noted for his patience.
They will not be putting that on my tombstone.
Representative West.
Mr. Chair, sounds amicable right now, Representative Hoppe. I'd throw it on while we're getting in the shape to offer once.
I think that's the way Representative Lilly wants it, but then it wouldn't conform to the Senate. So we should just.
Representative Lilly, tell us about your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for amending my bill and getting in the shape that we like. This bill essentially changes the current practices related to insurance regards to portable electronics and cell phones. I don't know if anybody's been out in the market recently. I just recently upgraded my cell phone, which is needed, but during the process you need to buy insurance for the cell phone and portable electronics. And so the rules that currently exist cover sales of all types of insurance, so we're creating a special situation where if you're selling these products, you don't need to be a fully trained insurance producer, or I guess that's the modern word, or agent. I have Mr. Thrain here this morning with me, who's a real expert, and there's in the rare case, there's peace in the valley on this bill. Everybody kind of seems to want it, and they're willing to pay for it. So that's pay the cost related, and that's kind of what the A2 amendment or A1 amendment was to cover the costs related to this coverage. So if I could just pass it to Mr. Thrain for a second, I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Peter Thrain. I'm with Leonard Street and Diner, appearing today on behalf of Assurion, which is the nation's leading provider of insurance covering portable electronics devices. As Representative Lilly mentioned, today consumers more and more are relying upon these portable electronic devices, and they are expensive if they're lost, damaged, or stolen and need to be replaced. Consequently, consumers are looking more and more to insurance to cover this product. In the insurance today, consumers like to buy the insurance at the point of sale, either at the wireless store or at the electronics store And consequently, the insurance law doesn't contemplate the representatives at the electronic store or the wireless store selling this coverage. The legislation that Representative Lilly's legislation creates a regulatory mechanism whereby the vendor of the electronics can also be then the licensee for purposes of allowing its employees to sell the insurance. In consideration of that, though, there's a number of important consumer protections in this bill. Number one, a very comprehensive disclosure has to be provided to each consumer seeking insurance at the time of a solicitation. It sets forth all kinds of terms and conditions and limitations of the product, and that has to be provided beforehand. In addition, each of the employees or representatives selling the product needs to be trained in the terms and conditions of the coverage and the limitations of the coverage. Finally, there must be a supervising agency appointed to supervise that retailer to make certain that these provisions of law are implemented. There is no controversy on this bill. The Department of Commerce has worked through these provisions carefully. There is no opposition that I'm aware of, and we certainly appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative.
And Representative Lilly, are we understanding correctly then that the A1 amendment that was just adopted covers the cost of administering this program?
I believe that to be the case. Let me, I'm getting nods and smiles from Mr. Peterson from the Department of Commerce. Yes, sir.
I thought it was Carlson.
Swanson.
Peterson, I believe.
Are there any questions for Representative Lilly or his witness? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, is this working?
No.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, maybe to that gentleman from Leonard Street and Diner. What's happening currently? If we're adding a $6,500 fee, what are they paying right now to do this? Because I've been to Best Buy, I've bought their insurance. My cell phone companies offer insurance. What's happening right now in the marketplace without this $6,500 fee?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, the law is unclear today. There are some theories under which the retailer can sell the insurance, but today they're typically not licensed. And so this creates a licensing mechanism that currently doesn't exist today, allowing the retailer, in this case maybe a Best Buy or a Verizon or a wireless carrier, to be licensed, and they're the person that is going to be paying that fee.
So,
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, they don't need to be licensed right now. Now we're requiring them to be licensed. Just doesn't necessarily make sense to me. I mean, if they're already able to do it, why should we add this burden to them? The second part to that question is there any consideration for, I imagine you're focusing on a Best Buy, Circuit City, they're bankrupt, Verizon, but what about a small regional cellular company or a smaller company that maybe is just in the state or just in a corner of the state that sells electronics? They pay the same fee?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Westrom, today, as I said, the law is not clear. There are provisions of the insurance code upon which a retailer could rely upon, but it's not clear that they have that authority. And so in order to make it clear that the employee or representative at the retailer can actually sell the insurance, this legislation creates a mechanism and a regulatory scheme to do that. And it is not opposed, and it's supported, in fact, by the retailers and the wireless providers. Now, with respect to the second part of your question, involving the fee, it's a fee of $6,500 that's paid by typically the wireless carrier or the retailer. Tends to be the larger stores, and that's why the fee is set that high. In other states where this has been implemented, typically there's between 8 and 12 licensees. You know, the larger retailers are the folks that rely upon this licensing mechanism.
So, Mr. Chair, what you're saying currently is illegal, or has there been court cases challenged on this, or
what's driving this in the first place?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Westrom, I think it's just sort of the emergence of the scale of the sale of this product in conjunction with these wireless devices. When the insurance producer licensing laws were enacted in this country 20, 30, 40 years ago, and their updates, they didn't contemplate this kind of a product. And so with specialty kinds of insurance products like this, and there are others that our insurance law recognizes, as the marketplace develops, exceptions and certain specific regulations are developed to accommodate that. And that's what this regulation is doing. There are currently 5 or 6 states that have enacted this. A number of others are considering it across the country this year. And it's just simply to follow the evolution of the commerce.
And members, I should point out that the fiscal note assumes that between 5 and 7 licensees. So it's not an enormous number.
Mr. Chair, one last question.
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, and maybe this is for the department, but so what are they going to do with this money? Are they hiring a new investigator or a new compliance auditor? Seems to me if they're doing it already, why don't we just give them the license so we know that's happening and they're doing it right now without anybody in the Department of Commerce apparently overseeing it. I'm not sure I'm convinced why we need to add $30,000 or $40,000 for revenue, which ultimately is a pass through to the customer. But any response to that, maybe the department's the ones that need to answer that.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Peterson with the Department of Commerce, and Representative Westrom, it'll be for licensing as well as for enforcement. We expect that there will be some enforcement of any sort of complaints that would come to the department that would have to be investigated, anything on the terms for the insurance.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom.
So, Mr. Peterson, are you adding a staff to do this?
And we would,
How are you doing enforcement right now, then?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom, we would be adding a half FTE for this, and currently anything that would come in would have to be through any, it would fall within the enforcement, and it would be outside of general duties. Yeah. And also programming as well for the licensing aspect.
Representative Kalin.
Good morning.
Oh,
Mr.
Pomeroy told me you were on the list. It must be a different list.
Mr. Chair, I believe he's on all
bad boy list.
Representative Kalin, or Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is early. No. I just had a question either for Mr. Threen or Mr. Peterson, but I'm just wondering how this will help with the problem, the infamous firewalls between some of the electronics companies and their customers, not necessarily with insurance, although I know that can be a problem as well, and I think as more and more insurance policies are sold, I would just like to know what your assurances are that when the customer that purchased this has a problem, something happens to the cell phone, the iPad, whatever. How is this going to help them get their claims that much faster? Will it indeed do that, or will it create another one of those endless firewalls where people are on a phone for a long time trying to get through to an actual person to help them solve their problem?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, this product, this insurance product, has been evolving. And the way the product works is a policy is issued by a licensed insurance company. It's issued typically to a wireless carrier or to an electronics provider. That electronics provider then enrolls customers sort of as they would under a group policy under this product. What this legislation does is it sort of formalizes an evolving practice whereby there's a supervising agency that administers that insurance policy It adjusts the claims, and it handles all of the aspects of the insurance. So the wireless carrier and the insurance company really are not very involved. The transaction is typically managed by this supervising carrier so that if there's a claim to be made, a telephone number is called, and the administrator administers the claim, typically by providing a replacement phone, and it happens very quickly.
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that sounds very good. I hope that in reality that's how that works out, because I know that people are really frustrated with trying to deal with their electronics on many levels, and I do hope that this will improve that, and it will allow people to get the new phone, the new whatever, with a minimum of hassle. So I'm hoping that will take place.
Further discussion. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly, is this a department bill? Was that being brought before by the Department of Commerce, or is it who's bringing it forward?
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Anderson.
Other than yourself.
that answer was suggested here. It's the industry that's bringing it, because they feel that there's a problem now. That the industry's changed, the needs of the consumer have changed, and they actually want to in a way self-regulate. They want to offer better service and product to the customer, but there's no sense for sending them through the traditional insurance system. I mean, so they're creating a whole new system, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
So,
actually, the reason I have this stuff here is I had. To answer Representative Saylor's question, is actually I had damage to my phone, and then of course then you've got to get a new phone, and that's not always fun. So yes, I was there in some of that you're talking about. Mr. Anderson, sorry.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Lilly, there's not a consumer group out there that's bringing it forward, and it will be passed on to the consumers to pay for this eventually.
Mr. Crane.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, this is a system designed to provide a more efficient mechanism for industry to distribute this product, and the licensing fee is going to be borne by typically a large wireless carrier, which has the ability to distribute that, you know, among thousands and thousands of customers. So relatively speaking, the impact of the licensing cost here should be fairly minimal.
But Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Anderson, the answer is
Representative Lilly.
Yes, I mean it will be passed on.
Representative Welke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers or to Representative Lilly. In my hometown, there is a workout gym combined with a DVD rental, movie rental business combined with a cell phone sales business. So there are three in one, and it's very diversified, and they've been a successful business. And it does have a drive-through because it was in an old bank. And you can drive through and drop off your DVDs. Love it. Cheap DVDs too. I go there all the time and do my business. But my question is for this business owner who sells cell phones and may sell insurance. I don't know if this business sells insurance as well, but as I read the legislation, they would have to pay a $5,500 license fee, and then an annual renewal of $1,000 or $1,000 for each renewal. I'm just wondering, is this going to apply to my small Main Street business that's not a box store that maybe was selling insurance and now is not going to be able to, because there's just no way that they could cash flow that?
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Welty, I think that you're hitting perhaps a problem in the bill here. So we are certainly open to like a single location. We just have to work with Commerce here to figure out exactly what the cost to cover the related to this work. But we're certainly open to that, and it makes sense. So thank you for the suggestion. Before it hits the floor, we would do that and figure out the cost with the Commerce and work that out. I think I go to Finance next, so I don't know if that's okay, Representative Welty, but I would be certainly open to your suggestion.
Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly, there was a comment a while ago that it was the industry bringing this forward. I just need to be clear, is it the insurance industry or the electronics industry, or which industry are you referring to?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, it's my client is Asurion, which is a member of the insurance industry.
Okay. My only other comment,
Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, is that I've never been offered insurance. I bought a lot of, I guess if you buy cheap cell phones, they don't offer insurance. That's been my policy, and I've never had a need to put in that, even think about it. So the whole idea of insurance is somewhat new to me. I didn't realize it. You know, I know they drop them into their, they're fishing in the wintertime or in summertime, they go overboard a few times, and that's, you know, so I guess there's a need probably to insure them, but so this is an interesting discussion for me, so thanks.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you for the discussion, Mr. Chair and members. We have a little bit more work to do, and I'm open to that, but I think it's a good bill, and appreciate your support.
You represent what?
Mr. Chair, and kind of to Representative Welter's point, it was kind of one of my first questions. I would be interested in seeing some sort of threshold for a smaller retailer, and I think of formerly Cell 2000, which was born out of the Alexandria area and then grew to kind of the northwestern corner of the state, but that was really their footprint in the state. And I don't know if, I assume we've still got some regional carriers like that. They've sold out to Verizon, but it seems to me we're going to have some people in that scenario. That it's not going to just be Best Buy and Verizon and Sprint that would maybe offer this. So I'm glad to hear you say that. I'd like to see what the changes are, or an adjustment in the fee. It seems practical to me to a small retailer, so they can offer the same type of product and generate revenue for their company just like the big companies do. But I'm not convinced we need this kind of a fee to begin with, because we're already doing this practice, and so that's what I'm a little puzzled with the need for this. And I've been buying, well, being offered, I haven't bought it often. Best Buy has been doing this for, I got to bet, believe 20 or more years. And so I'm puzzled that we couldn't work something out in the current scheme. So I'm not convinced quite yet that this is the right way to go. Last question for the department maybe is, if we're adding an FTE, how does that fit into the hiring freeze that we've got on in state government? Do we offset it with some retirement of somebody else?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom, we would look to be offsetting with a retirement or something of that nature.
Representative Lilly or Mr. Crane, do you know currently how many retailers offer any kind of insurance?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, in the state of Minnesota, I do not know what the current business practices are. In other states, and I hope this is responsive, when these enactments have been made, there have been six, eight, 10, 12 licensees, but that doesn't contemplate the number of locations. So I'm sorry, I don't have no specific answer.
Well, Representative Lilly, I think the concern that has been expressed in a number of ways here is that what we don't want to see is this become a fencing bill, which only certain companies are able to offer this insurance and thus gain a competitive advantage over those that can't. I guess currently we don't know who does or does not offer this insurance, legally or illegally.
Mr. Chair and members, that certainly is not my intent, and I'm open to suggestions, as I've mentioned, and we can certainly work together to make this more flexible, especially for the individual points of sales, so one-store operations, or if you will.
Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not exactly a question, just sort of a general comment for everybody's benefit. If you do drop your cell phone in water, like Representative Norna's mentioned, this is not foolproof, but if you take it apart, kind of dab it dry, and put it in a bag of dry rice and seal it, sometimes it works. I've never had to do it personally, but I'd be willing to test it on somebody's phone here. We could do it now, but I've seen people that have dropped them in a lake, completely submerged, they put it in the bag of rice, the next day it works like nothing's wrong. So don't sue me if that doesn't work for you, but should that happen to befall you, give it a try. Joe, you want to volunteer your phone? Well,
perhaps there's a process that the Department of Commerce could license. Representative
Mr. Chair, just the last conversation spurred my question. What another industry that offers insurance is the jewelry industry, and I'm wondering, how do they offer it, or will they fall under this new structure, because they've got the same kind of deal going on, it appears to me. When you go in, you can buy insurance if you break, lose, whatever, your jewelry. So how do they offer it? Or are they offering it kind of under the same questionable scenarios as you're saying the electronic retailers are?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, this legislation wouldn't cover jewelers. I will tell you, at the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, there is a conversation about any number of different categories, what we call the limited lines, licensed to deal with situations like that. And my understanding is that this legislation is based on the conversations at the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and my suspicion is that in time, as those products evolve, similar or expanding provisions to deal with those circumstances will be proposed similar to this. But today, this legislation deals just with the portable electronics insurance.
Representative Lilly, I'm very much tempted to lay this bill over until you deal with some of these issues that have arisen through the bill is being referred to finance, but typically what occurs in the finance committee is just that we sort of get assurances that all of the details have been worked out, and I think in this case there are details that have not been worked out. We will be meeting at least twice next week, and I think what I want to do is just lay this bill over and give you an opportunity to address these issues before we move it out of this committee.
That's fine, Mr. Chair, members.
There is no further discussion. The bill is laid over.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Weston.
While he's coming forward, just a question on process. These bills are after deadline. Do they also then go through Rules Committee after Finance, or how does that work, or are these bills that don't fit under the deadline rule?
Representative Wester, my understanding is that the only deadline that applies for finance bills is for omnibus bills. These individual bills are not subject to a deadline. And while we're waiting for Representative Mullery to orient himself, the chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from March 24th?
So moved.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of their approval, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
House File 2600. Representative Mullery, the chair will move that House File 2600 be recommended to pass and be returned to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, I see the gendarme has left, and could you call him back just because Representative Gunther threatened me this morning? So he said, I'm going to get you. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that is required by the federal government. It was actually required that we pass last year, and Minnesota is the only state in the country that didn't pass it last year and comply with the federal government. I got a call from the banking commissioner of Massachusetts in August and asked if we, says, I know you're kind of independent up there, are you seceding from the union or what? It was originally brought by the banking commissioners to Congress, and they set it up and passed it. And it's administered by HUD, and it's a requirement on basically on mortgage applications and counseling. And the representative from the industry is here this morning. They're in full support of it. Our House bill here is in accord with the requirements of Congress. I just talked to the head of the division of HUD that regulates this SAFE Act on Monday. And we have an amendment here which is just regarding the lowering the fees in accord with the needs of the department. It's the A9 amendment. If somebody would move it, and then
Representative Mullery, the chair will move the amendment.
And as part of that, Mr. Soderberg could explain there's been a slight change since the amendment was drafted.
Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chair, members, if you look at the amendment, on line 1.2, where it says delete 200 and insert 75, that should be insert 90. And then on line 1.8, the number reads 132,000. That should be 138. And that just makes the bill so that it's revenue neutral as far as its fiscal impact, Mr. Chairman.
The chair will incorporate those changes into the amendment. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, maybe staff can just fix this without us incorporating a change, but on line 1.7, appropriation is just misspelled. So I don't know if you want to incorporate the correct spelling of appropriation on line 1.7.
Hopefully that I think that's something that the staff would automatically do, but we'll make sure that that's incorporated, Representative Hortman. Representative Norris.
Mr. Chair, question for Representative Mullery. Does this grandfather in?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morris, I don't know what you mean.
We're dealing with 2600, right?
Yes.
Talking about requirements for mortgage originators? And no requirements.
Representative Norris, we're still on the amendment. Could we?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Act on that.
I'll wait.
First.
I'll wait.
Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norris, there is nobody grandfathered in because they're not licensed now, so you'd have to go through this, and that's what the federal government wants.
I guess that was my question, Mr. Chair, that there are a lot of people that in banks, other places that provide mortgages, they're all going to have to go through this process of getting licensed. Do I understand that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nordis, my name is Robin Brown. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Just a little bit of background. Currently, we license companies. The individual employees of the companies are not required to be licensed. This bill requires them to become licensed in compliance with the Federal SAFE Act. So okay, this is the individual employees of the mortgage companies.
Okay, that includes the banks, anyone that provides mortgages. Okay. That was my question. Thanks for the answer.
Yeah. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Mallory, aren't mortgage loan originators acting for a depository institution part of the exemption? So really, it's anybody who's in a bank or a credit union is exempt?
Brown. Mr. Chair, Representative, bank employees will be registered through the system. They will not obtain a license. They won't be required to do the education. They won't be paying licenses. But there is a registration of those individual bank employees.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mallory. So bank employees, if you're a clerk or registrar, you fall under a registration of one of the employees of the bank as being certified to be qualified underneath this loan, underneath this law? I mean, you're talking about all employees.
It's the
and registration.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the registration is of the individuals that will be originating the loans. It's not all bank employees. It's just those individual people within the bank that are doing the actual origination activities.
Hmm. Thank you.
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Brown, or Representative Mueller, whoever, we didn't pass this last year. What happened? And what happens if we don't pass it this year? And second question, you talk about loan originators. Is it just on housing loans, or is it all loans? And what happens if we don't do that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, if we don't pass it this year, the federal government, under their law, has the right to come in and set up a licensing system on their own and charge us whatever they want. The second question is, it only applies to residential.
Further discussion? Representative Gunther.
You notice he was really worried about me, Mr. Chairman. But my question to you is, Representative Mulry, is this going to make it harder for people to become unscrupulous mortgage lenders?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gunther, we certainly hope so. But we also, what people don't seem to understand is, in talking to the head of this division at HUD, is it's also not to just get at the corrupt ones, or crooked ones. It's also to get at the totally incompetent ones, because a totally incompetent one that's advising somebody on the mortgage counseling or something can put a person, this is their biggest investment in life, and if they really screw them up, they can just do as much damage as the other. So it's according to the person at HUD and the head of the banking commissioners for the states. It's for both purposes.
Further discussion to the bill? Representative Mulry, it is our understanding that the amendment that we adopted with the adjustment in the fees covers the cost of the administering the program?
Mr. Chairman, that's what we're told, and the department says yes.
Seeing no further discussion to the bill, the chair will renew his motion that House File 2600, as amended, be recommended to pass and be returned to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Junkie. Representative Junkie, welcome to the committee.
Nice to be here. Following Mullery, I think it's class of 96. I represent West from Bay here. So.
Yeah, maybe you had an opportunity to chat with former Representative Reuter yesterday as well.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Sequence, I call him.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, just for the committee's information, I did, and he said the fourth quarter last year was the best royalty checks yet, so I tried to entice him into buying us at Savoy's again, but it didn't seem to work out. So.
And Mr. Chair, to members that don't know, Representative Reuter was elected in 96 with Representative Hilty, Westrom, and others, and as well as myself. He had a dream one night. And he dreamt about the game Sequence. A lot of you have Sequence at home. You've had it for years. He woke up, wrote down his idea, brought it into a game company, and they developed the game Sequence from that dream he had. And he stayed here a couple sessions, and he's now living in Texas. So, but it was just an interesting story how that game was invented, and it was one of our colleagues that did that. So when you see that laying there on the... with your family at Easter time, the Sequence game is out. That was a Minnesota State rep's dream that developed that.
So I should start writing my dreams down?
That would be.
Just checking.
Mr. Chair, I think the news there, the important item I got from that is that a state legislator actually got enough sleep to dream.
Yeah. To the bill?
Yeah. Representative Junkie, the chair will move that House File 3122 be recommended to pass and return to Committee on Finance. And I believe that we have included in the packets an amendment, the A3 amendment that adjusts the fees so that they do cover the cost of administering the program. Members, we do not have a fiscal note with this bill. The fiscal note was adjusted, and the amendment actually reflects, to my understanding, the
And Mr. Chair, we hope to get more fiscal. I think they're still working on looking at this amendment or other things to adjust that fiscal note. If we have to tweak it going to finance, I guess we can. But this should take care of the initial one, which actually showed a positive in the first year of this program and then negatives in the years going outward. And so that's why the note is here. And hopefully Commerce, again, members, just a brief explanation. This is a real estate appraisal management company bill. This is a national, again, trend to register and manage these type of companies. So it's not something just Minnesota's doing. We've worked with the management companies, realtors, appraisers, the Commerce Department, and everyone else to put this together. So we're a little green as to actually knowing what kind of fees will be required to make sure the Department of Commerce stays whole on this. And so we may be adjusting these as we go forward, too, once this program gets in place. So that's why there's a little confusion on the fiscal notes yet, and we're trying to get them solidified as much as we can so we can at least get the program rolled out and started.
With that, members, we do have the motion for the approval of the A3 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative West.
The A3 amendment was supposed to go on the Leon Lilly bill.
I think, Representative Westrom, that was a different A3 amendment.
We laid that one over. We could still put it on.
Well, you have some time to get it prepared, Representative.
I'll go talk to him.
Representative Junkie, to your bill.
Well, again, that's basically why I'm here. This bill had already passed out of Commerce and was on the House floor, and we came back to adjust the fiscal note. So it's, like I say, this is about a two-year process bill. It started last year, and we've worked with everyone, as I said, over the interim and into this session to make sure everyone's on board, and they are. As this, again, it just lays out a real estate appraisal management companies. For full disclosure, I am a real estate appraiser too. So management companies are an entity that basically round up work and hire appraisers to perform appraisals out in the field. And there's a real sense that they ought to have some basic levels of reporting and knowledge and who's managing these appraisers and appraisals, et cetera, especially in the days now where, again, we're seeing the real estate market in somewhat of a distressed level. We want to make sure everything in the appraisal field is done in a reasonable manner. So the first part of the bill basically lays out that management company regulatory structure. Article 2 in the bill is just simply relates to a real estate appraisal advisory board makeup over in the Department of Commerce. We're basically doing some cleanup and technical work for them. There's no cost to that. That board serves at their own expense. So that Article 2 has no associated costs. The costs are all with the first part.
Questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie. I see the Realtors Association and people that are appraisers are supporting this bill, but I'm just wondering, was there an incident here in the state or other incidences across the nation that precipitate or may, you know, propel this thing to come forward? And cause it looks like it's going to add some more regulations and stuff in the industry, and I'm just wondering about the small guy out there and how it's going to affect him financially and otherwise. Everything we add more and more on just...
Right.
Burdens them down.
And actually, Representative Anderson, this helps a small guy, and I'll consider myself a small guy. I'm an appraiser. What we're seeing, you know, from an appraiser's point of view, and I'll put my appraiser hat on and my author's hat off, you know, appraisers many times through these management companies feel that, you know, they're not disclosing what the appraisal fees are, that I'm being paid for an appraisal. That shows up on your closing statement. There's a these are the middlemen, if you will, or middle women, however you want to do it, in these transactions. And basically, these are very, for the most part, extremely large, probably national companies. Norwest Bank runs an appraisal management company. And these fees, frankly, are fairly insignificant to them. So the fees aren't the problem. But it's that whole management structure and making sure that these management companies are adhering to USPAP, the federal regulations for appraisals, make sure that they understand who's liable for appraisals when they're hiring, and you know, who's the client and who's doing the appraisal, who's paying for appraisals. All of that needs to be laid out in the very professional field of appraisal. So this is a kind of a new entity, a middle ground entity that's developed over the last number of years, and certainly while there maybe hasn't been incidents in this state, nationally there have been, and this is a national, this language was basically brought through by national organizations and is happening in other states too, as Representative Mulry said previous to this. It's one of those things that we do need to do and really insist on as appraisers too, that these companies are operating under the same rules as the little guys are out here, who are independent fee appraisers who are trying on their own to get the work.
Sam Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Junkie, is this then correlating with federal law that's already in place or federal regulations that are coming forward, or what's the scoop on that?
This is
Junkie.
Well, the USPAP is federal regulation on appraisers. Universal Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice is USPAP. That's federal, and that's being embedded into these appraisal management companies. Those guidelines, and they're fairly extensive. Every 2 years, we have to take a USPAP class to update ourselves on federal laws and other things. But those USPAP rules are being embedded into these management companies. So, in a sense, yes, there is federal rule and federal law that's being incorporated in here. But then generally, this is what's been developed by the states and state associations, and now is kind of moving forward as more of a uniform type of law. So again, appraisal management companies, and the reason they were involved, too, to make sure that we are not individualizing Minnesota as far as management companies go, because they do work across state lines. So they want this language to be similar to what Wisconsin or Iowa or other states would be doing. And so we're trying to keep this as uniform as possible as it moves ahead, too.
Representative Galen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is as much a question for you as for Representative Junkie. I think that all the fees that we've talked about today are going to the general fund, and you know, in essence, they're designed as kind of dedicated fees. But
yes,
you know, knowing the deficit that we have ahead of us, and knowing that even the most aggressive you know, tax increase that could happen to cover up to $6 billion deficit gets us at best a third of the way there. You or the next chair of this committee are going to face some really difficult choices again next year, just with the limited accounts we have. And wondered if you just wanted to share, you know, I have a little bit of caution about creating these fees that then, you know, we're going to have to go in again. We made some good but tough choices already this year with a very, very small deficit in comparison.
Representative Kalen, was that a question?
I mean, I think a caution. I don't know if Representative Junkie has some, I mean, because you have to deal with this in ag as well, and where you have a larger budget than we do, but I'm concerned that we're creating fees that are supposed to cover, you know, programmatic areas and staff to do the kind of regulating that we're talking about, but we're going to need to get every dime that we can next year.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Representative Kalen, that's a broader question. You're right. I sense in our committee and others that I've seen that over the last 8 years, 10 years, frankly, departments more and more are trying to self-finance themselves, too, rather than draw from general fund monies, which has been a mixed bag. You know, if you're a license holder, the penalties have become more severe. License fees have been adjusted. I mean, there's a lot of pressure, I think, on people that are licensed by the state to do that. Again, with these fees, I think the oversight is the issue. And certainly in our committee, and I would suggest, I'm sure, Representative Hilty, too, moving forward, and that's why I mentioned this is a new entity. I mean, the Department of Commerce is guessing right now what that will cost to administer, to keep the records, and to fulfill the requirements of this bill. But certainly after a year in place, next year and the following year, there ought to be some review of all these fees, particularly new ones that we incorporate, and the department should report back on whether they're meeting the need or not. And that falls to us as a legislative body for oversight and the individual committees, and it's one that hopefully all finance committees are taking serious moving ahead.
And Representative Kalen, I think that's a good point, and something that we are going to have to look at ongoing is how we deal with all of these fees. There's been a movement in recent years, as I'm sure many members are aware, to do away with dedicated funds and special revenue funds, and not anything that I personally particularly thought was a good idea at the time, and I think it's something we need to keep very close track of going forward. Representative Kalen?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think just to clarify it, I think just the larger concern is we're adding more to the plate of a department that has done a very good job, and it probably has the most buttoned up you know, I think the collaborative approach that they've taken in solving the budget with us as well reflects their professionalism. But we are adding more to the plate of an already burdened department, as most are at this point. What I am afraid that we do is add more and then more responsibility and take away the resources to meet that responsibility next year.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Kalen, I agree, and that's again the purpose of the fiscal note. You know, they're going to get $119,012 and $123,013 from this. That would, in my mind, that means they would hire one full-time equivalent to administer this program, and along with the the technology and other things they need should be covered in that cost, and I'm assuming that's what they're estimating too. So it's my assumption that this means there's an extra person hired for this program, not that they're absorbing it, or we wouldn't be charging the fees.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a suggestion, Representative Junkie, would you mentioned earlier that we should, because this is relatively new in the way it's going to be put into place with the, in the department, and someone's going to have to remember to take it up and look at it, just make a suggestion of putting a sunset in, which would then trigger the factor that it would have to come up, and the department would have to then bring it, have someone within the legislature bring it back to have it looked at if there's some problems or...
And Mr. Chair, I guess that's up to the committee. I would not suggest sunsetting the program, but if you sunset the fees, then they have to be reviewed. But again, that's I don't know how your committee handles that. It's not something we've typically done in our committee, but that's certainly up to you. That's one idea out there.
Representative Hoppe.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, you'd referenced Wells Fargo, I think, and maybe other institutions of that kind. I guess I'm a little concerned that even those large companies are under all kinds of financial pressures these days, so I'm a little concerned about adding more fees to what they do to stay in business. But I guess the question I have primarily is on the individual appraisers that I have in my community. Who maybe don't work for a management company, they will not be impacted at all by your legislation.
Mr. Chair and Class of 96 Nornes, they will not be affected at all. The individual appraisers, this is only for the management companies. They may decide to hire their services out to a management company and come under their umbrella, but it wouldn't change anything they do. Okay. Only where their payment for the appraisal came from and their negotiations would be with the management company. And we have had the management companies in who have worked with this. I mentioned Norwest and others that they're comfortable with the fees that are in here. Again, they're extremely large companies. I want to emphasize that for the most part. And it's fairly insignificant in their overall operation.
Seeing no further to that, Representative West.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I think you answered what my concern was, but Representative Junkie, is the distinguishing because a current appraiser or small sole proprietor, they're licensed already in Minnesota. If there's a group of four or five appraisers that have gotten together to create a partnership, they're not a management company. They wouldn't be affected. They're already licensed. They're paying a renewal fee probably every year or two. Is that what the deal is? And but just when they put out their services, and then just a second part to that, are they going to have to disclose what they're getting paid then at the closing, so the borrower knows how much the management company basically has taken a cut out of it?
Representative Junkie.
Representative Westrom, the group of appraisers you talked about would not be under here. And in fact, in the legislation that's before you, there's a whole section on who's not included. And it would include, you know, your normal companies that are already out there. I may be an appraiser and I might hire three other appraisers within my firm. And we're working together to appraisals in West Central Minnesota. We would not be considered a management company. That's a different type of operation.
Further discussion. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, in Section 9 of your bill, it talks about the commissioner has the ability to impose a civil penalty of $10,000. under what circumstances would that take place?
Representative Junkie.
Again, I'd ask either counsel sitting here at the table or the departments in the room to come down. It's in respect to Chapter 45.027, which we didn't change in here. It just simply gives them the similar authority that they have with real estate agents and appraisers and other things that they oversee. So I'm not sure what triggers a $10,000 a violation, but I'm sure someone in the room could tell you that.
Budget deficit.
That may be it. But again, I don't know if council knows, if Mr. Eloff knows. Sure. I think the Commerce Department is here, too, if they want to come up and mention that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, this references the Department of Commerce's regular enforcement authority under Chapter 45. They've got broad enforcement authority there to enforce whatever laws are under their jurisdiction, including this one. And their penalties, as you can imagine, depend upon the seriousness of the offense. And this specifies a $10,000 maximum here, but they have authority to you know, give somebody a warning or a short-term suspension or fine them or, you know, whatever the offense justifies.
Mr. Chair, this is new language in here, and I'm just wondering if it is in someplace else in statute that we're taking it from to now put it into this bill. You're referencing 45 point, but in this new language, I'm just wondering if there's a $10,000 fine for other type situations that come about.
Mr. Pender?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the language here on page 8, starting at line 8.6, says the commissioner has under this chapter the same powers that the commissioner has under Chapter 45 in Section 45.027. So it's just taking the commissioner's regular powers that are already in statute and just saying that they apply to this chapter, which is this new chapter created here just for this bill, the same way that they apply to the department's chapters relating to insurance and banking and securities and everything else they regulate. So it's to give the department authority to enforce this, because otherwise they wouldn't necessarily have it unless it's put into the law like this.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, or to the testifier, we must have some discretions within the system that they're wanting to go after and be able to impose this penalty.
And Mr. Chair, I'm sure there are, but I don't know how often a $10,000 violation shows up in the Commerce. That would be something fairly serious. At that point, probably a fraudulent activity that's happened in the real estate area.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the Chair will renew his motion that House File 3122, as amended, be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Motion Thank you, Mr. prevails. Chair and members.
Members, we will be meeting probably two times next week. We're still working on times and places for that. Please pay attention to your emails, and we have probably, at least a handful of bills to deal with next week, some of which I think you'll find interesting. and with that, the meeting is adjourned.